Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is out this week. Well, with less than a week to go before Election Day, both President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, well, they both held rallies Thursday in Tampa. Both campaigns are attempting to sway voters out there still holding on to their mail-in ballots, planning to vote early or to go to the polls on Election Day. President Trump took the stage at around 1:45 p.m. in the north parking lot of Raymond James Stadium. He told the crowd he was happy to be in his home state of Florida and then promised to jumpstart the state's economy.
Under my leadership, the Florida tourism industry and hospitality industry will come roaring back very soon. It's ready to happen. We're making the turn.
All right, so the president's rally was crowded, raucous, and also maskless. A few hours later, Biden hosted a very different event, a drive-in rally at the Florida State Fairgrounds.
Donald Trump just had a super spreader event here again. They're spending more than just coronavirus. He's spreading division and discord. We need a president who's going to bring us together, not pull us apart.
Two candidates and two completely different approaches to campaigning here in Florida in the closing days of this race. We begin the hour with a closer look, and here's our call out across the state right now. Let us know who will get your vote for president. Give us a call, Florida. It's 305-995-1800. Call us up here on the show or tweet us at Florida Roundup. We'll go to your calls and tweets in a little while, but first, WUSF's Steve Newborn attended the Biden rally. He's with us now from WUSF. And Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Melissa.
So as we heard, Joe Biden's event was smaller than the president's rally, also socially distanced. People were masked up, and it was a drive-in event where people could honk their horns from their cars to show their enthusiasm. What did the vice president have to say, and how did his supporters react?
Well, Biden spoke for about 20 minutes before being chased off the stage by a pounding rainstorm. He talked about saving Social Security, which is obviously a big issue here in Florida with our large number of seniors. A called servicemen and women patriots, not suckers and losers, like the president allegedly said. And he talked a lot about the coronavirus, which got a lot of cheers from the audience. You know, but the big story here was just the contrast between this rally and President Trump's rally just 6 hours earlier at Raymond James Stadium, just across Tampa. Like you said, this is a drive-in rally. This is an invite only. So I think there were only about 200 people there. They were all pretty much preaching to the faithful, and everybody was kind of set apart, and one of the announcers even said, please, you know, give some distance between you and your neighbor. And you contrast that to what the president's rally was at the stadium, which was just packed affair. People were passing out from the heat. The governor actually had to stop his speech twice to let medics come and drag people who were passed out of the audience. Not a lot of people wearing masks. And here at this rally, it was just the polar opposite. It was kind of cool and breezy and not a lot of people. And I think the enthusiasm was still there, but just not the same kind of enthusiasm, if you know
right.
What I mean.
Right. Yeah, two very different approaches. And how did both Biden and Trump talk about COVID-19? Because we are seeing cases rise here in this state and around the country. Coronavirus is once again surging.
Right. Well, the president doubled down on his assertion that we're rounding the corner and, you know, the vaccine is on the way. And you could tell by the crowd there, nobody was wearing any masks here. At the Biden rally, he basically called out the president for politicizing the coronavirus. He said, we should all be planning for, you know, safe, equitable, and free distribution of PPEs, the personal protective equipment. And he, again, stated his plan to come up with a deal to deal with this pandemic that would be calling for a mask mandate nationwide and providing a national plan for the funding of PPEs and national standards for schools and businesses to reopen. And he called it a patriotic duty, so he's kind of turning Trump's assertions on its head. And the big line of the night was, he said, as I said before, I'm not going to shut down the economy. I'm not going to shut down the country, but we're going to shut down the virus. That's the difference.
That's the difference. Let's talk about where the candidates were. Both of them choosing Tampa on the same day, not even that far apart from each other in their rally locations. Tampa is a bellwether city for this election. The I-4 corridor obviously is always one that can help pick presidents. What does it tell you about the significance of voters in your listening area that both Biden and Trump decided to visit Tampa just a few days before the election?
Right. The mythical I-4 corridor. It's not even it's national. It's international renown. We're talking about the strip of Central Florida between St. Petersburg and Tampa on the Gulf Coast and Orlando and Daytona Beach towards the Atlantic. This is really the swing part of the swing state, to use an old cliche there. Most of the counties here voted for Obama twice, and most of them switched their vote to Trump in the last election. Now, we're seeing indications that Biden is in the lead in three of the biggest counties, Hillsborough, Orange, which is Orlando, and Osceola, which has a lot of Puerto Ricans who fled Hurricane Maria and weren't exactly thrilled with the president's reaction and provision of aid to the island after the hurricane swept through. And basically, the conventional wisdom is the election is going to hinge once again on Florida. Trump can't win the country without winning Florida, and you can't win Florida without winning the I-4 corridor.
We'll be counting the votes here, as you will in Tampa. So, Steve, good to get your insights. Steve Newborn of WUSF on the line. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, according to most polls, Biden is slightly favored to win Florida's 29 electoral votes. But, of course, in this state, with our infamous razor-thin margins, polls don't always predict the outcome. Right now, we're discussing Florida's importance in the 2020 election as we welcome Chris Saliza. He's reporter and editor-at-large with CNN Politics. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. You know, your CNN colleague Sanjay Gupta reported this week that in many counties where President Trump has held big rallies, COVID infections jump in those counties after his visit, although they weren't able to document that here in Florida, where the president has rallied numerous times. As coronavirus is spiking here and around the country, what are your thoughts about how this is playing in Florida with our large senior population and how that will impact their vote?
Well, I mean, I think it, first of all, on the senior point, I think it's hugely important, not just in Florida, but in the country. Seniors are, so 65 plus, are by far the most reliable age group in terms of voting. These are people who are consistent voters. We see essentially your likelihood of participating in an election dips as you get younger, all the way down to about 18. Older voters have long been the coin of the realm for candidates who want to win. That's not just true in Florida, though obviously it is true there because of the number of seniors there, but true nationally. What we've seen is that Donald Trump, if you believe polling, and I broadly speaking do, has really struggled among that age group. And I think it is not a coincidence that seniors are the most vulnerable to COVID-19, and Donald Trump has and continues to take a decidedly cavalier and dismissive approach, not just to the virus, but to people who have gotten sick and passed away. Thursday in Florida, he said, "You'll get better. If you get it, you'll get better. I got better. And if I can get better, anyone can get better." Well, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that's not necessarily true. Not everyone gets the medical treatment that the president of the United States, or can afford the medical treatment that the president of the United States can. His son, Don Jr., said, "It's such a small number of people. It's almost no one," talking about deaths. Well, I think the 288,000 people who died and their families would disagree with that. So I think it's hugely problematic in Florida and nationwide, the way in which Donald Trump is judged to have handled coronavirus, which is, you know, a majority of people believe he has mishandled.
Yeah, we did have 73 new deaths from COVID reported today in Florida. We've surpassed 800,000 positive cases. The raw number of new daily cases here is up at its highest level for nearly 2 months. 9 million COVID cases now around the country. So plain and simple, this is the COVID election. It has upended everything, yes, including the way we vote, Chris. And let me ask you about that, because we are seeing really robust turnout in Florida, both voting by mail and early voting. Lots of people choosing to vote by mail because of the virus. We do pre-count the ballots here in Florida, unlike some other vote-by-mail states. So we could have a result here on November 3rd. And that could provide some clarity the evening of the election, depending on which way Florida goes, right?
Absolutely. I heard your last guest make the point about Florida and the Republican Party and presidential candidates. Look, it's been 96 years since a Republican candidate was elected president without winning Florida. That is, I tell people that even when I'm not doing radio on Florida stations, because it is such a central state to a Republican map. Its size, its number of electoral votes, it is essential for Donald Trump. And I mean that in every sense of the word. Are there paths, the 270 electoral votes, that do not include Florida for Trump? Sure. I mean, we could go through a semi-plausible path, but they are very unlikely. If it is shown that he has lost Florida, November 3rd, November 4th, whenever, it is a very telling sign. If you told me today Donald Trump loses Florida on November 3rd, I would tell you there is a 95%+ chance that Joe Biden is elected the next president of the United States, just because of how central it is to both candidates, to both parties, but particularly to Republicans, and even more particularly to Donald Trump's math. There just isn't another state of the size of Florida and the number of electoral votes of Florida that he can pop in and replace a loss in Florida with.
We're talking with Chris Ciliza of CNN. Let's go to your calls, Florida. Who will get your vote? We've got Trump and Biden voters on the line already. It's 305-995-1800. Join us. Dave is in Treasure Island. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm in Treasure Island, and I've only been here now about 3 years. I was a snowbird for 18 years down here.
Uh-huh.
I'm a resident and I'm very happy to be here in Florida. And I think the vote in Florida is going to go for Trump.
You think it's going to go for Trump? Are you voting for President Trump for re-election?
Absolutely, yes.
All right, Dave, thanks so much. Marie is in Miami. She is a Joe Biden voter. Hi, Marie. Happy Friday. Go ahead.
Marie, and I am a senior, and I still have to work. And with those two things being said, for me to continue to work, I need to be healthy. So for one thing, it's important to elect a president who gets a grip on this pandemic to keep us healthy. And secondly, the reason I trust Joe Biden on the economy is because Joe Biden, and as the vice president, brought us the economy that we had from that recovered from the deepest recession in history. So Joe Biden has my vote because I know we saw him do it, and he will do it again. He can bring us back the economy that we need right now and protect us from the pandemic. And so far, Trump has failed to protect us from this deadly virus.
Thanks, Marie. Marie, thanks. Thank you for that. And so, Chris, we heard from Dave, a snowbird who's come down here to Florida. We have a huge contingent of snowbird voters who eventually do land here full time, a lot of them from the Midwest, and many do vote Republican. Strong Trump supporter. And then it was interesting to hear the contrast from Marie in Miami laying out her reasons for supporting the vice president. And of course, the coronavirus is at the top of her list. That gives you, I think, a really quick snapshot into the split we see in this state and the country.
Yeah, look, I think Florida, we know this from polling. We know it from past elections. It's going to be relatively close. Neither candidate is going to win Florida by 10 points. I think a 3-5 point margin would be, given Florida's historic election numbers, would be a pretty convincing win. I do think Maria makes an interesting point. She mentions the economy and its ties to COVID-19. So what you see in virtually every poll, national, state, whatever you like, media, any kind of poll, when people are asked what the most important issues are in deciding their vote, the economy and the coronavirus are always number one and number two. And they are sort of inextricably linked, I think, for most people, in that the economic struggles that have followed the shutdown of much of the country in early spring and then the slow ramping back up of the economy, that's on the minds of lots and lots of people. And you can't talk about that without talking about what happened, what made the country shut down. And that's obviously COVID-19. Donald Trump is trying to decouple those a little bit. He's sort of putting his own spin on the COVID-19 numbers. You know, we're rounding the corner, et cetera, et cetera. I would note that there were 88,000 cases nationwide on Thursday. That's the largest number since the start of the pandemic. Over 1,000 people nationwide died on Thursday. It does not suggest we are currently rounding the corner, but he's trying to do that in order to get people to have coronavirus not on the front of their mind, to have the economy and what he had done pre-coronavirus mm-hmm. on the top of their mind. It absolutely will work for some people. I am not convinced it's going to work for enough people, either in Florida or nationally, for him to win.
Mike is holding in West Palm. Hi, Mike. Who got your vote?
How are you? Thank you for letting me speak.
Sure.
Been in West Palm Beach for all of my 68 years, and I could walk out my front door for 25 of those up until last year, look across the Intercoastal and see Mar-a-Lago. As a person who has personally met Donald Trump about 12 to 15 years ago, I can tell you that he is an absolutely amoral man. He has no morals whatsoever. He doesn't care about his own three wives who he's cheated on repeatedly. How can we expect him to care about us? I already voted at the main library in West Palm Beach, the same place that Donald Trump voted last Saturday. I have closer polling locations to my home than there, but I wanted to go there so in my own heart I could say I went to the same place that the POTUS went to and counter his vote. Finally, a woman who lives right around the corner from Mar-a-Lago met me at a restaurant one time about a year ago.
We're close to a break, Mike, if you could say it quick.
Very quickly. She turned around and said, "Excuse me, I couldn't help hear your conversation. I would vote for a potted plant before I would vote for Donald Trump."
All right, Mike. That's Mike in West Palm Beach. I appreciate the call, Mike. That gives you a sense of the passion that we see out there, Chris, in this election. We want to hear from Trump supporters, too. Listen, we are speaking with Chris Saliza of CNN, and I want to give the number one more time. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Who will get your vote for president? Have you already voted? We want to hear from you because Florida could play the decisive role on election night. Tweet us now your calls and tweets as we get closer to November 3rd. More of that after the break as we continue the conversation with Chris Saliza, reporter and political editor at CNN. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Thanks for being with us Friday. My co-host Tom Hudson is off today. Well, there are only 5 days left to vote in the 2020 election. And for the past few weeks now, we've been sharing the voices of voters from across the state's crucial I-4 corridor as they talk about their vote in their own words. Today, we meet Michelle Yamas from DeBary in Volusia County.
Hi, my name is Michelle Yamas. I live in DeBary, Florida. I'm a registered Democrat, and the most important issues to me this year are social equality. Actually, that's one that's important to me every year, healthcare, and trying to deal with the student loan debt that's just ridiculous and making higher education more affordable. I actually immigrated to the U.S. when I was about 6 years old from the Philippines, and becoming a citizen was like the coolest thing that ever happened to me in my life. And coming from a different country with a different political system really lets me appreciate the freedoms we have to vote and a lot of those civic things that maybe people might take for granted if they've never not had them or if they've had a different situation. So last year when I thought about what was important to me when it came to voting and political issues were always equality, social equality. I think that's always my number one thing, because if you lead from that and you care about that, so many other issues are tied to that. So I think that now my ideas have changed because we've had this pandemic and it's revealed a lot of what I perceive to be weaknesses in our strategy, local, state, and nationally. We just didn't have anything prepared for something like this. And it looked like the country was completely blindsided. The pandemic and the way that we deal with issues like this globally and not just in the country, because it also showed me that we really started pulling away from the global stage. And I think now more than ever, we really have to be united as, you know, a world and not just as a country. When it comes to protests and unrest in my community, I live in a small town. So, you know, a lot of these things don't really touch us as much. We don't have a lot of protests here as far as, like, say, the Black Lives Matter movement, because everyone's pretty much the same here. So no one's actually going out and protesting anything. Plus, I think we skew a little older here as well, where I live. And so people are a little bit more chill about that stuff. It doesn't mean they're not actually flying their flags or making their, you know, opinions known, but no one is actually going out into the streets and doing those kind of things. When the protests were going on, I was definitely very plugged into it. My main way of looking at things wasn't so much the news, was more social media. You know, I'm 42 and, you know, I've never really seen anything like this in my lifetime, where it's been something where the scenes look like another country, you know, a place that has always lived with turmoil. I didn't grow up in a country like this. And so it makes me really sad to see that. And it's why
30 seconds, Melissa.
The election, I think national leadership is really important, because that ties in state and local. They sort of follow that lead. Even though states have their own way of handling things and local laws, they still look to a really strong central government to sort of help lead and tie things together. So I'm hoping that in this election, we see a change and we see someone that is going to unite us more than divide us.
WUSF's Jessica Mazaros produced that audio postcard. It's part of America Amplified. That's a national reporting initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We'll go to a few more of your calls about the election at 305-995-1800. Tweets go to @FloridaRoundup. And back now with Chris Saliza, reporter and editor-at-large with CNN Politics. Getting lots of tweets, Chris, too, saying the same. Here's a tweet from a listener. I'm voting for Biden. We need to wake up from this nightmare and move in the direction of progress, equality, and union in peace and love. Is this a change election, Chris? Or do you sense that the electorate is ready for a change?
Yeah, it's funny. It is a change election, but I guess I would describe it as change back to more of the same. Which is Donald Trump, the reason Donald Trump won, I can point you to it in exit polling conducted of people leaving their polling places in 2016, was that 40% of the overall national electorate wanted a candidate who could bring about real change. Donald Trump won 82% of the vote among that 40%, which is a stunning amount. It's why he won. His idea of being a radical outsider appealed to lots and lots of people who thought politics is simply broken. None of these politicians who have been there, Democrat, Republican, have gotten anything done. We need something so, so different. And my gosh, he promised so, so different. What Biden is promising is actually not a terribly partisan argument. He has disagreements with Trump on immigration, certainly, and on trade and on healthcare. But his argument, in essence, is these last 4 years were a mistake. This was an anomaly. This is not who we are as a country. We need to get back to electing people president who have the skill set, the knowledge, the seriousness, and the gravity to do this job. Notice I didn't say anything about being a Democrat in any of that, or being a Republican, Donald Trump being a Republican. Joe Biden's is sort of arguing we need to go back to electing people like George W. Bush, people like Joe Biden to be president of the United States, not people like Donald Trump. It's a fascinating argument because presidential races are typically the most partisan political races we have, sort of forcing people into their partisan camps. Biden's message is not terribly partisan. It's essentially saying Donald Trump is a glitch in the system. We need to fix the glitch.
Yeah. And it's my understanding, too. I believe Biden has the most crossover support in modern electoral history. That has been remarkable to see. Let me get one call on for you, though, Chris, because we've heard from Trump supporters and Biden supporters calling into the show. We are now going to go to Michelle in Pembroke Pines. She is voting for a third party candidate. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Go ahead. Who's getting your vote?
I am voting for the Green Party this time. I have usually voted Democrat, and I have actually become very disgusted with the Democratic Party. And the Republican Party has always shown to be a rather hostile party to Black Americans. We are the people that have been here since the beginning. We are not immigrants. We are not any other place. We are from here. We've been here since 1619, if not before. And we have been consistently ignored. We have been consistently being treated with the most vile and absolute disgrace in this country. And currently, we are continuing to exist under an absolute terrorist policy. So the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party.
So neither party is doing it for
not
you.
One.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Okay, Chris. As we've been saying throughout this show, people are heated. The passions are running high, and you hear it in the callers' voices. There is a small sliver of voters out there that will choose the Green Party or the Libertarian Party. But unlike the 2016 election, it's a much smaller slice, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is likely to be a smaller slice. And the reason for that is if you are voting Green or Libertarian, you are casting a protest vote, which is exactly what the caller is doing. She's saying, look, I'm not going to vote for the Republican Party. I don't think the Democratic Party has acted in our interest. I want to signal my opposition to these two major parties, and this is the way I'm going to do it. I think what you have, that is a view, but it is a less common view in this election than it has been in past elections. And I think the reason for that is Donald Trump has made in his presidency, have made very clear the stakes, what is at stake here. The difference between a Donald Trump presidency and a Hillary Clinton presidency over the last 4 years has been made clear to even people sort of who give politics just passing or even less attention. I think the difference between a Joe Biden and a Donald Trump administration would be significant tonally as well as from a policy perspective. And I think for most people, that those stakes lead them to want to cast a vote for one of the two people who have a reasonable chance of being president. That is the Libertarian Party nominee, the Green Party nominee, the other third party nominees that will appear on ballots across the country. These people are not going to be president. If you are voting for them, you're voting for them as a sign of protest, as a sign of solidarity, as a sign of opposition, whatever it is. But the only two people who have a credible chance of being president of the United States are Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And I think the desire to have a say, given the stakes, is what is driving the third party numbers down a little bit nationwide and forcing people to sort of really decide, is it going to be Trump or is it going to be Biden? I'm not going to take a third option.
Right, right. Well, it's great to get your insights. And I want to thank you so much for stopping by and spending some time with us here on the Florida Roundup, Chris. Thanks so much.
Oh, I'm thrilled to do it. Good luck. Trust me, I will be watching your state extremely closely over the next few days.
I'm sure you will. And we'll be watching you on CNN. He's Chris Saliza, reporter and editor-at-large with CNN Politics. Well, labs in Florida are processing coronavirus tests more quickly than they were when the pandemic first started back in March. But on the average, it's still taking between 24 to up to 72 hours for most people to get those test results. Health experts say the delays can really make an impact on contact tracing and quarantining efforts that do the most part to prevent the disease from spreading. Let's talk now to Julio Ochoa, editor at Health News Florida. In a moment, we'll also welcome Veronica Zaragovia, who covers healthcare for WLRN in Miami. Julio, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we do have Veronica as well. Hi, Veronica.
Hi.
So good to have you both. It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about coronavirus testing. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Julio, let's begin with you. An unscientific survey by Health News Florida found that most people in the Tampa Bay area had to wait up to about 72 hours for their test results. Other parts of the state are a little more speedy. But how is this testing delay, the lag in getting results, impacting spread of the disease? What are you finding?
Well, I mean, you can only imagine if you feel sick and you go and get a test and then you go home and you're quarantining and you stay that way for 24, 48 hours and you start to feel better, you might want to go out, and if you don't have the results of your test and it doesn't say that you're positive, you may go to the store and buy something to eat or go back to work, and that could spread the disease. So getting quick results are of utmost importance to keeping the disease in check.
That's right. And Veronica, the lag time tends to vary, doesn't it, depending on where in the state of Florida you go to get the test and who gives you the test, correct?
That's right, Melissa. We've been hearing that here, most of the people who responded to that survey in South Florida happened to have taken a test in Miami-Dade County, and they were telling us that they've been receiving their results within 24 to 48 hours, but that's also a result of a contract that the county has with the labs that process those specimens. In the county, the labs have to be able to return results that quickly. I mean, this is, of course, a much more urban area than other parts of the state where maybe the return times are slower.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Okay, so Julio, can you explain the process a little more to help everyone understand what happens to a COVID test after someone takes it and where the delays along the way are slowing things down?
Sure. So you go in, you get the molecular test, which is the PCR test. That's where they put the swab in your nose. And that test must be sent to a lab where it has to go through a machine. Depending on where it is sent, we found Hillsborough County actually has to send their state-run sites or their state-facilitated sites, they have to send their tests all the way down to Miami, to a lab in Miami, to get processed. So you can imagine that adds to the delay, maybe 6 hours if there's no traffic, right? But so once it goes to the lab, it has to be loaded into a machine, and those machines can hold so many tests, but we're told by labs that the more tests you try and process at once, the slower it takes to process those tests. So if you're trying to cram a bunch of tests into one of those machines, it could really slow down the process for turning around these results. And if we're talking about a turnaround time of 24 to 72 hours, that's really where the process could be slowed down, having to go through these machines at these labs, because once they come out of the machine, you have the results. Most of that's electronic, and they can inform you very quickly.
Veronica, what do you think the solution is? Any way to rectify this time lag in testing that Florida is suffering through?
Well, at the moment, there are a lot of other options. There are, for instance, a lot of startups. And I did interview recently a new company called StatLab, and they're being paid for by the state to run a bus that is going around the state and testing people at convenient spots. And so I think these kinds of efforts are helping as the pandemic progresses. But one thing that I think is important to say is that at the moment, there are perhaps the return times are not as high, but a lot of people are not getting tested. And there's this false sense that the disease isn't spreading, or that the coronavirus isn't spreading, which is the virus behind the disease. And that's not the case. And so county officials are really urging people to get tested and to take advantage of these opportunities, because that's a really important measure to contain the coronavirus from spreading.
And with just a minute to the break, in that lag time between the test and the result, they should isolate, right? They shouldn't act as normal.
Absolutely. If you feel that you've been, if someone feels they've been exposed to someone who has a positive diagnosis, they really should stay home. And Miami-Dade County does offer hotel rooms for people who need to isolate from their family. So that program is still available. And it's really important not to go out and about in the community until you know.
Until you know. Sure. We are talking about coronavirus testing in Florida and the lag time in getting results. Let us know your experience with COVID testing. What are your questions about getting a test? It's 305-995-1800. Get on the line now, and we will go to some of your calls after the break. Send those tweets to @FloridaRoundup as we talk COVID testing. That's in a few minutes. A quick break, and then we are coming back statewide. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is out today, and we're continuing the conversation about coronavirus and testing as we welcome back Julio Ochoa, editor at Health News Florida, and Veronica Zaragovia. She covers healthcare for WLRN in Miami. Your COVID questions, give us a call now at 305-995-1800. Julio, what about rapid tests for people who need results immediately? Is there any chance of them becoming more widely available in Florida?
Absolutely. Just this week, we learned that the Florida is receiving about 6.5 million rapid called antigen tests from the federal government over the next few months. And so we're starting to see those in testing sites around the Tampa Bay area. And the government said they're going to be sending those to schools and first responders, long-term care facilities, senior living facilities, those kind of places.
That's good news. But in the meantime, Veronica, tell us a little bit more about how the testing delays could be impacting the state's daily reports on COVID. You know, every day we're told about hospitalizations, positive rates, deaths. How are these two things interacting?
Yeah, well, of course, the way to measure the positivity rate is by knowing how many people get tested in a day, to know the percentage of people testing positive. With those rapid tests, however, it's important to know that those tests are looking for a protein on or in the coronavirus, and they're not sensitive. And so the problem is that you get a lot of false negatives. And that brings down the state's positivity rate, because the more negatives you have, the lower that rate is going to be. Whereas those PCR tests that people know of as the long nose swab test, that's a way more specific, very sensitive test that has to go to the lab. And that's where the delays come in, because it has to go to a lab. It requires chemicals that are in high demand across the country. So those are hard to come by sometimes, and that causes delays. But it goes through this amplification cycle where the genetic material of the specimen gets amplified enough times to see if it matches the genetic material of the coronavirus. And so it's easier to tell if somebody's positive.
We're getting tweets about that, about the lack of reagents to run the PCR test. People are following this pretty closely. Julio, what about ongoing questions about the data the state's putting out? The state numbers often differ from dashboards reported by other trackers like Johns Hopkins or the COVID Tracking Project. You've been following this closely at Health News Florida. Why do we see this mismatch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This came up recently, right? We just saw that Johns Hopkins is changing the way it reports the positivity rate. So it's kind of complicated, but you can think the state of Florida, there are several ways to arrive at the positivity rate. The simplest thing to do is divide everyone who tested positive today by the total number of people who were tested. So if you had 10,000 people who tested positive today and 100,000 people were tested, then the positivity rate is 10%. But Florida digs a little bit deeper because they say, that's not truly an accurate picture of the positivity rate, because when someone tests positive, they're likely to get another test, and the likelihood of that second test being positive is very high, right? Because they're already positive, and if they get another test, they're going to be positive again. So what Florida likes to use is a positivity rate that counts the percentage of people who tested positive for the first time, and they divide that by all the people who were tested that day. So it excludes anyone who has previously tested positive. So what Johns Hopkins has said, and actually it's the COVID Tracking Project, which is run by The Atlantic, which is where Johns Hopkins gets their data. What they have said is, we're now going to change the way the data they use to calculate the positivity rate. And the new way will more closely match Florida's positivity rate. So that's kind of a good thing, because people have always, and they've called us and said, you know, the positivity rate that Florida is putting out does not match the positivity rate that Johns Hopkins is putting out. Why is that? And you know, it throws controversy into it, and people think it's a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And really, Melissa, the bottom line is there's no federal standards that require states to use the same data and calculations to report the rates of coronavirus. So without that, states are left to their own to put out their own rates and calculate the data themselves. And we really need federal standards. Which would let us compare apples to apples across states.
Such an important point. We're talking about coronavirus testing in Florida and the delay in getting results. For many of you out there, this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Veronica Saragovia, as we talk about testing, can we also mention the big picture, which is that COVID is spiking again around the country, including in Florida? Public health experts are warning over and over this week that the virus is still very much with us, and not to get complacent, and that this winter could be quite bleak. What are your thoughts as you continue to cover the virus for WLRN and you're seeing these numbers?
Melissa, what an important question, and I really appreciate that, because just today, the State Department of Health announced that We've had in the last 24 hours almost 5,600 new COVID-19 cases. So before our listeners get bogged down on all of these problems, also just know the very basics that the disease is very much there, present, spreading at alarming rates. And we haven't had such a high increase in 24 hours since August. And our elected officials haven't really been having press conferences except in Palm Beach County for quite a while. So people might have this false impression that everything's fine because everything in the state is open. But the reality is that mask wearing and physical distancing and washing of one's hands remain as paramount as they did since March.
Getting lots of tweets about coronavirus here at Florida Roundup. Catherine tweets us, point out that many people are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic at some point while they're still contagious. The feds are covering tests at nursing homes, but not for most long-term care facilities. Julio, can you talk a little bit about vulnerable places around the state, long-term care facilities, and also schools, because most students are back in brick-and-mortar school?
Yeah, I mean, we know that the governor just recently opened long-term care facilities for more visitors. And, you know, that if you have a relative in a long-term care facility, you really have been wanting to visit them. But it could be a scary thing, too, because even if there is virus detected in a long-term care facility, the governor has said that you'll still be allowed to visit that facility. As far as schools, you know, we've seen cases pop up in schools. I know down in Miami-Dade, they've seen hundreds of cases, and here in the Tampa Bay area as well, and across the state. So being able to test children and teachers is highly important as we try and keep this virus at bay. I know there's also been several large events, you know, that are happening across the state with the election. And that's another big issue. People are starting to congregate and bars are open. So a lot of people are tired and they want to get out and start doing what they've normally done. But it's very important to remain vigilant.
That's the final message, isn't it, Veronica? Whether you have a mandate in your part of the state or not, wear a mask especially and continue to distance, right?
Absolutely, and take advantage that we live in a state with such beautiful weather. We're so fortunate here that you can see other people safely. You know, wear your mask, but go outside. And the biggest danger is when you're a group of people congregating in an enclosed space. The virus spreads tremendously easily just from those droplets that come out through the nose or through the mouth. And so wear your mask, go outside, enjoy the beautiful weather, and stay safe.
It's hard, isn't it, guys? Because as Julio said, we all have fatigue with this. We've been dealing with this most of the year, but we can't let up now, can we? It's still an issue.
That's right. It's we want to save lives here, and it's utmost important to remain vigilant.
So that is the takeaway, everybody who's been listening to this really insightful conversation about coronavirus testing and problems with that around the state. I want to thank you both so much for sharing your insights with us. You've been covering this all year long. It's been quite a year. Julio Ochoa, editor at Health News Florida. Always great to get your insights about healthcare in this state. Veronica Saragovia covers healthcare for WLRN in Miami. And as they have been saying and saying and saying, keep your masks on. Keep socially distancing. Just use common sense as we see this surge in coronavirus. Guys, thanks so much, and have a great weekend. We really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
A quick note, I'm in Jacksonville, where Mayor Lenny Curry extended a mask mandate for Duval County for another month. That was a decision that was received very well in Northeast Florida. And that is our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and Technical Director. Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz, with engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be back next Friday at noon, and happy Halloween!